The primary election is approaching, and our senior senator, who was challenged for re-election, now faces criminal charges. It was learned this morning that Senator Ted Stevens has been indicted by a Washington grand jury. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Our guest today is one of Ted Stevens' primary election opponents, Dave Cuddy. Our number, toll-free, 1-800-478-8255, and Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email live at talk@aprn.org. Dave Cuddy's take is coming next on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP, proud to support public broadcasting in Alaska.
Okay, this is Steve Heimel, and there was a news conference at the U.S. Justice Department. Mr. Cuddy, if you go ahead and put those earphones on, and you'll find a knob there next to where it's plugged in. If it's too loud or too soft, you can adjust accordingly. A news conference the Justice Department is holding at this very moment in Washington, D.C. Our correspondent there, Libby Casey, is on hand at that news conference. We may hear from her later. It's totally a coincidence, really, that we had Dave Cuddy booked in the show today. He has run against Ted Stevens before. He's back again. And Dave Cuddy, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dave, you're from a longtime Alaska family. Your family is the First National Bank family, I believe, right?
That's correct.
And you chose to run against Ted Stevens not one election ago, but two elections ago, what, in 96?
That's true.
And you felt so strongly that you basically threw a fortune into that race.
I did. We sold everything we'd accumulated. We put about $1 million into that race.
Well, why did you feel so strongly?
This country is broken in many ways. We've got national debt. We've got politicians who've been stealing from Medicare and Social Security trust funds so that our kids aren't going to have anything at retirement. We've got foreign policy problems. We've got immigration problems. The economy is in a tailspin. We've lost our middle class. We seem to be creating more and more dysfunctional families, which creates problems in schools and all the social services areas. And politicians tend not to – they tend to ignore those things. And they did 12 years ago when I ran, and they're doing even more so now. And it's as Tip O'Neill says, all politics is local, and the voters reward the politicians, whether it's Oklahoma or Nebraska or Alaska, the ones who create a special relationship, special interests, special favors, pork, cookies, any of those things. And as long as the voters reward people for that kind of special interest, the general interest is ignored. So, if I can just continue the
– Absolutely.
So anyway, 12 years ago, and it's even worse today. The issues I ran on 12 years ago have exacerbated. The national debt's worse. China owns a big chunk of America. The opportunities for young people are not what they were when you and I were coming out of college. So I've got two children who just graduated from college.
There goes your cell phone.
I know. Sorry. I'll get that turned off.
All right. Thanks a lot. This is I myself called that cell phone not too long ago to make sure that Mr. Cuddy knew about the indictment. And indeed, somebody had already told him. Okay. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. I don't know if you can catch the spot where you're
I can.
At.
Anyway, you're just asking why I'm running, and it's not like I want power or money or any of those kinds of things. It is that this country's in trouble. Our present batch of politicians have ignored this country's problems. And no matter how strong Alaska is, if America goes down, it brings Alaska with it. And so Alaska's my home, but we've got to fix those problems back in Washington, D.C. in order to have a great Alaskan future.
So I guess we have to have your take on the indictment. Do you have any idea what the substance of it was? It essentially has to do with the renovations of the property and that he didn't disclose that. So this means that he's facing, I think, 7-9 counts of non-disclosure or lying about financial arrangements, and the evidence is going to include wiretaps with Bill Allen, who had a lot to do with the renovation of the property and various gifts and so forth. That's as much as we know at this point.
I haven't paid a lot of attention to it this time. I ran on a lot of those issues 12 years ago, and it didn't get any traction. There weren't any investigations. And this time, I really haven't paid a lot of attention to it. I was a couple of minutes late showing up here because I was listening to the press conference. And the points that you made are the ones that they're talking about, and whether he has committed crimes or whether it's just poor judgment and ethical lapses and conflict of interest, I don't know. I don't know what the facts are. And for myself, I'm going to stick with what are the issues that America needs to face and what are Alaska's needs, and whatever happens with Senator Stevens, I'll let all that work itself through.
Well, you know, I recall the primary election of 2 years ago when we were surprised not so much by the fact that Sarah Palin won, but the fact that she beat Frank Murkowski so badly. And she took the high road, but not quite as high a road as you're taking. In other words, she was really accusatory. And I do want to press you a little bit on this because you have said, you know, well, they're mortgaging our future and so forth like that. But do you perceive that there is a culture perhaps of corruption amongst the powers that be?
Absolutely. Nationwide, there are 2,200 cases of public officials that are being investigated by the FBI. This isn't happening just in Alaska, and it's because of this culture of money. Follow the money. Why does Jesse James rob banks? It's because where the money is. Why do the special interests and lobbyists and crooks and all those people buy and own and control politicians? It's because that's where the money is. And so there's absolutely a culture of corruption and conflict of interest, not just in Alaska, all over this country.
The Stevens indictment must have been known to the White House. I would think that the Justice Department would not take one of the most senior U.S. senators, I guess second most senior maybe, you know, to file charges without taking it to the very highest level. This would seem to indicate, would it not, that there's some solidity to this?
I just don't know. I mean, there's no question if you look at all of the things that Senator Stevens has been investigated over, the Seward Sea Life, the commercial fishing, the Girdwood House, the Special Olympics, all those things. There's no question that they're all conflict of interest, lack of ethics, lack of judgment. But are they unlawful? I have no idea. Until we know what the facts are, we just don't know.
So Senator Dave Cuddy, think about it. What would it be? What would it mean? I understand that you're pro-life.
I am.
Do you want to expand on that?
I believe that life begins at conception, and I believe that it is the protection of life is one of the constitutionally protected rights.
I would like to invite the callers to engage in conversation with Dave Cuddy. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. He's running against Ted Stevens. His campaign just got a boost. And your questions to find out more about the man who's challenging Ted Stevens on the Republican side are welcome at this time. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, and Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Dave, you'll probably understand if our Washington correspondent calls in during the show, we'll want to talk to her a little bit about what's...
Absolutely. I know you understood when I was a minute or two late showing up that I had to catch the tail end of that. So it's been a hectic morning for all of us, and we all need to be flexible.
You... I wouldn't think you have the personal resources to fund an aggressive campaign this time around. What are you doing? Are you looking for donations, or how are you funding this?
Sure. So far, we have not spent a lot of money, and we've had a fairly low profile race. We've just kind of dealt with issues, and through the primary, it's always tough to raise money unless you're an incumbent. Incumbents attract just tons of special interest money. So I'm going to have to bankroll it. It will not be – I don't expect it will be anywhere near what we put in 12 years ago.
How much was that?
I think we put in about $1.2 million.
Wow. And you ended up with what, 27%?
27 to Stevens 56. So that was of the total amount, Republicans and Democrats. But of the within the Republican side, I think that would mean that Stevens had a higher number and I had a higher number, depending on what you're using as a scale.
Do you think that the closed primary, that only Republicans and undeclared can vote in the primary in this race, might advantage you here?
Actually, that it's in both times it's worked against me. Last time we wanted the closed primary because our internal polling showed that we could beat Senator Stevens in that primary, and he was able to get the Alaska Supreme Court to open up the primary at the last minute. And so since there was no real Democrat campaign, they all crossed over and voted for Stevens. This time it's a closed primary, which again now works against me because I've got so much support. The Alaska Independent Party folks really like me. The Libertarians like me. The nonpartisans. I'm an independent, and I'm running as a Republican for a lot of reasons. I think the platform's good, but basically a third party just traditionally can't win. It's so hard. But so it's too bad for me that it's a closed primary this time, because Mark Begich would suck off the big government vote that would ordinarily have gone to Senator Stevens. So an open primary, because there is a strong Democrat in this race, an open primary would have been better for me this time. So I'm getting the worst of both rules.
I can see your point of view. Big government vote. There's a thought. Well, if it does turn out to be you that has the Republican nomination, it appears likely you would face Mark Begich. He's younger than you are. He's going to be very well financed. I would assume that you would probably be getting substantial party money at that point as well. But what would be your would you take it on in the basic party line of, you know, big government, big spending, taxing, and so forth?
I would take on. I think the Republican platform that basically is personal responsibility, limited government, caring about our nation's future and our children's future. Those are my philosophies, my thoughts, and I think they are also in the Republican Party platform, but they are not what our Republicans have been actually doing in practice. This last 12 years, Republicans have been in control, and what have they done? They've cranked up government spending. There's been corruption in all 50 states. There has not been the caring of those things that we need to do to protect and save and nourish this country to hand off to our next generation. So I am in no way defending the Republicans who've been running this country.
You come from a background in the financial services industry. The fact that you're running for office intrigues me just personally, because it's kind of like Dave really doesn't like banking. What I was just wondering how you feel about the financial services industry and the idea of privatizing retirement and Social Security, which you know, has been sort of a Republican hobby horse so far, and whether that's included in the things that you think the party really shouldn't be pushing so hard.
I guess I would correct your assumption. It's not that I don't like banking. It's that after spending 22 years with 60 hours a week and limited vacations and time off, I mean, it just consumed me. I mean, there's rotary breakfasts at 7 and chamber lunches and entertaining clients at dinner and weekends of running in because the furnace is off and the branch is going to freeze up. And so after 22 years, there just wasn't time to do anything else, to write the great American novel, to there's just so much in the world out there. And so when I left the bank and after I lost to Senator Stevens, I've spent the last decade working all over this country. I went back and got my MBA at Gonzaga in Spokane. I worked for a company for a half a year in Seattle, Washington. I was a dot-com CFO in Boston. I worked for an entertainment company in L.A. I worked real estate development in Florida and Texas. And it just gave me the opportunity to getting away from the bank to do all those things and earn a living in other areas.
Dave Cuddy is our guest. He's running against Senator Ted Stevens, who today was indicted. Cuddy is a Republican. He's from Anchorage. He ran in 1996, got 27% of the vote. As he pointed out, it was in an open primary. This will be a closed primary this time around. We can assume, I think, and we'll talk more about this later, that Senator Stevens is politically wounded, and that probably enhances the prospects for Dave Cuddy. Your conversation with Dave Cuddy is welcome at 1-800-478-TALK, and our first caller comes from Kodiak. It's Jake. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dave Cuddy. Jake?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Jake.
Dave, I congratulate you and thank you for running again. And I got an email from Randy Ruderich this morning that talked about you and made some quotes of yours that were very high-minded and very welcome. And I'm sure that, well, it's a sacrifice, public service like that, but too many times our elected officials forget that they're public servants. I'm sure you will never do that, and I wish you the best.
Thank you, Jake.
Do you got a question on an issue there, Jake, or a particular thing you'd like to highlight?
I'm just kind of busy, and I've just briefly sat down to look at my emails and heard you fellows talking, and I just wanted to take my hat off to Dave and wish him Godspeed and the best.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. It's Talk of Alaska. Dave Cuddy is our guest. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-TALK. Jim joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dave Cuddy, Jim.
Yes, good morning. I have a question. When does public service turn into self-service? At what point are we able to recognize in politicians? That's why when I hear politicians refer to their activity as public service, I cringe. Because we don't know what goes on behind the scenes that is self-serving to their career, their retirement plans.
I agree with you, Jim. You know, you look at, as you talk about retirement plans, the politicians have a better retirement plan than Social Security, the public-type retirement plans. I think, though, that it generally takes a while for the politicians to figure out how to raid the public treasury, and that's why I'm one of the reasons that I'm supporting term limits. I think we need to get citizen legislators in, whether it's state office or federal office, and mix it up and turn around more. The longer somebody's in, the more entrenched they get, the more special interest groups support them, and the more that they start thinking about how they should be paid more than what just their salary is. And so I think one of the ways that we can solve that is we need to level the playing field, open it up for more people to compete and turn out and have term limits.
Thank Jim? You.
All right, Jim, thanks for your call from Anchorage. Dave Cuddy is our guest. Dave, I don't think I got quite the answer about whether you favor privatizing Social Security.
It's about a 30-minute answer, so I'll try to figure out how to answer this in a minute. How did we get here? We got here because the politicians embezzled trillions of money from that fund to pay off the senior vote. And it, basically they've bankrupted the system. And so, yeah, privatizing it so that people pay in could get it put into an account with their name on it certainly would be a better way to do it. But I don't know how you do that now. If this were a private company, you would let it declare bankruptcy and you'd start over. But this isn't private. This is America's retirement for senior citizens, and they've been depending on that. And somebody who's 50 or 60 years old is expecting that to be around. So I don't think – even though philosophically I would prefer a privatized Social Security where the money you put in goes in an account with your name and it's held in trust for you, I think we're too late to be able to do that. And so maybe there's a way of letting 10% of your money go in that way to start building up something of that fashion. But if we did that and all the young people were able to convert that to their own account – then overnight, Social Security would be broke. And so I think we're going to have some kind of a phased-in process.
I believe we're in touch now with our Washington, D.C. Bureau head, Libby Casey, who has been at the Justice Department news conference where they announced the indictments of Senator Ted Stevens. Libby, are you with us there?
I am, Steve. Hi there.
Hi. How are you doing? And was it a dramatic event or was it dry? They tend to be dry.
Well, I think it is a very dramatic event just because a lot of us weren't expecting this to happen so close to the election. Of course, Senator Stevens is up for re-election here during the primary in August, and I just interviewed him yesterday, and this indictment just came down this morning from a federal grand jury.
Well, the substance of the indictments, as I understand, all have to do with things that he did not disclose in his financial disclosures?
That's right. As a senator, you have to fill out forms that show any gifts that you've received, any debts that you may have, and they have to really list everything that exceeds just about $300. And so the indictment charges that he did not disclose certain gifts that he allegedly received from the Vigo Corporation and from its CEO, Bill Allen, during the years 1999 to 2006. Senator Stevens has not been indicted for bribery or quid pro quo, you know, like you give me money or a house and I will do you a favor. That's not what this indictment is. It's that he did not disclose various gifts. But the Justice Department says that the gifts go all the way up to $250,000 worth of items. And it's surrounding his Girdwood home. You'll remember last year the FBI and the IRS raided the Stevens Girdwood home. And the indictment alleges that Vigo paid for a lot of gifts, including the renovation of that house.
And did they disclose the kind of evidence that they're going to bring forward? I understand that they were wiretapping, well, we already know they were wiretapping Bill Allen, but apparently Allen would have known that he was talking with Ted Stevens and also that he was cooperating.
No, they have not talked about yet what evidence they have. That will come out at a later date. At this point, they're just announcing, you know, what sort of things are listed in the indictment. What kinds of gifts allegedly were they? And as you probably know, it's things that we found out about that the FBI and IRS were looking into last year. The renovation of the home, including like a new first floor, a full basement renovation, bedroom and bathroom. And then that Vigo contractors and employees performed many of those things and even supplied things like architectural designs and things like that. Now, I guess the big question, of course, is what happens at this point? And the Justice Department would not talk about whether or not they've engaged Senator Stevens in any kind of plea deal or if he's what that conversation's like. And I guess the senator will be allowed to turn himself in. They're not going to go and arrest him. He will be allowed to turn himself in his time.
And will they have a so there's no date yet set for him to answer the charges?
No, not yet. Not at this point that they're letting us know about.
Okay. And who handled the announcement for the Justice Department? Was it a really high official? I mean, this was the grand jury was in Washington, D.C., not Alaska. We know we still have a grand jury operating here in Alaska as well. Was this a high official that made the announcement?
This was an acting assistant attorney general for the criminal division of the Justice Department, a guy named Matt Friedrich, and he was joined by someone from the FBI and the IRS. So we're not talking about, you know, the Attorney General of the United States making this kind of an announcement. The room was packed, though. The press is very interested in this right now, especially during an election year. I was only one of a couple of Alaskan reporters there. Most of the reporters present are national, you know, CNN, NBC, NPR, because Senator Stevens is such a powerful, important presence on the national scene.
Yeah, I think In some of these events, we've seen prosecutors use some fairly strong language to characterize their charges. Did you have any of this this time around?
I would not say that. In fact, you know, they really came in at the end and said, "This is let's remind all of ourselves, this is an indictment. This is not a conviction. This just means this now has to go forward." And once again, this is not an allegation of bribery. And that's just not what this charge is. And I think that is a difference, you know. And so they made sure to emphasize that, I think, to kind of quell the fire a little bit.
Yeah, so it largely has to do with the magnitude of the gifts from Bill Allen.
Correct. Yeah, and like I said, equaling up to $250,000.
So I think we can probably expect if there's a defense, it'll definitely center on that. Well, very interesting, Libby Casey. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you made it to the Justice Department, one of your first days on the job here. What a way to start a job.
Thanks, Steve. Now I just have to find some more Washington-appropriate clothes because I'm still wearing my Alaska clothes. So I'm sweating like crazy, but definitely worth it.
I'm not sure what it is for women. I know for men it's a blue blazer.
I have no idea either.
I'm sure you will find out. Libby Casey, thank you so much for taking a few moments from what's going to be a very busy day for you.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
All right. APRN's Libby Casey on the scene in Washington, D.C. Well, Dave Cuddy, you just heard what our reporter's take on it on the fly here. And it looks like these are not the immense charges that some were speculating we might see.
I was surprised, too, when I heard it was just Girdwood. And again, I'm not an insider. I don't know if there will be more charges coming down. I don't know what that does to the other things they've been investigating. I do not claim to be an expert in this area.
Right. So you're just watching it just like everybody
just
else?
Just like everybody else.
Well, are you ready for some more phone calls?
Sure.
Good. I've got calls. Okay, let's go to Kelly, joins the program from Wasilla. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dave Cuddy. Kelly.
Hey, Mr. Cuddy. I Googled you about 6 months ago, and I found some of your projects, but I did not find a web address or a website. Are you on the internet now?
Yes, we've been for, I think, 6 months. It's www.davecuddy.com.
There's two D's in it. There's two D's in there.
Two D's. I'll remember that. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye. Thank you so much for your call, Kelly from Wasilla. Yeah, well, you said that you actually your second careers, third careers was in the internet, right?
It was. It was a very interesting job. I started in January of 2000, just before the crash of the dot-com.
Yeah.
And it was a time when I'd just picked up my MBA, and they were looking for people to – CFOs were in high demand, and there was a Harvard professor who was putting history books on the internet and offering through universities. Instead of selling a 4-pound textbook, he would give them a license to go to the internet and download and streaming video and French classes and such. And so it was very interesting. I learned a lot about technology, and we had – interesting people on the board. We had Michael Bosky was on our board.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm gonna move into more financial questions here in a moment, being as how you were a CFO as well as a banker here. But I'm going to let the listeners have a few cracks first. Greg in Juneau, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dave Cuddy.
Good morning, Mr. Cuddy.
Good morning, Greg.
Some people mentioned that, you know, the soul has a memory, a conscience, and the ability to decide. And I don't remember myself, and most people don't remember things that when they're a year or younger, from conception till a year. And you said that the soul starts at conception. What decisions and memories do you have from conception to your first year? If you had a soul, you would remember that. So could you please explain some of the decisions and memories you had from conception to your first year of a birth?
I guess I didn't say that there would be memories. I don't have any. My first memories come when I was about 3 years old.
Well, there's a conventional, again, this is a debate that goes on. The classic argument is your soul doesn't begin until your memory is there. If you don't have a memory and you're not making a conscious decision, you don't have a soul. A soul has to make a conscious decision, or there's nothing there. What's there? What is your history? What is your conscience? What is your decisions of right and wrong? There is none. If you have no free choice, the Bible mentions that and a bunch of other things. You have no conscience. You have no memory. There's no soul. There's no soul until the memory comes there. So I don't know how you reconcile that. If you could please address how you can have a soul and a conscience that you can't remember it. Anything at all.
I guess the question I would have for you then is, are you saying that a one-month-old baby does not have life, does not have a soul?
There's a lot of things that have life. There are plants and animals have life also. Are you saying they also have souls?
No. I think what my statement was, I said I think life begins at conception, and I stand by that. I think that it does.
Why does it begin at conception?
Oh, now we're. I think it's about as far as we can go with this one, Greg.
But I'm making a distinction between life and a soul. And if you're saying that's the same, you're saying that everything that has life, plants, animals, and everything have souls. If you don't make that distinction, if you do make that distinction, please explain it.
Okay.
The distinction between having life and having a soul. I have not heard that distinction from you yet.
All right. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. I'll take the answer off of her.
All right.
No, you're not going to get that answer here. That's probably a – my wife just picked up her philosophy degree, and that's probably a four-year answer.
But, you know, you can speak of your belief, and your belief essentially is that you are – you think that abortion is wrong.
I believe that life begins at conception, and I believe that there is a constitutional protection. That's one of our Bill of Rights protections, is the protection of life.
All right. Thank you. He's very forthright about that. Mr. Dave Cuddy is our guest. He's running for U.S. Senate against Ted Stevens. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, a local call from Anchorage, 550-8422, if you want to talk to Dave Cuddy as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 25 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8400. The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN, covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
It is Talk of Alaska. It's a moment in history. Our senior U.S. Senator has been indicted, Senator Ted Stevens. Our guest is Dave Cuddy. He is running against Ted Stevens for the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate. Dave thinks the nation is in trouble, and we've got to do something about it. And he's available to talk more about it with you at 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. If you're ready, we'll just go to some more phone calls. Let's go to Carmeta, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Carmeta.
Good morning. After that last caller, I want to add a comment. My question is, explain God in 25 words or fewer. Can you do that?
Oh, thanks a lot.
Oh, sorry. My real comment was, yay! And especially for pro-life, yay! And my questions are, what if your choice, who is your choice for president, if you want to answer? What if your choice doesn't win? How will it affect your work program? And can you help the Mountain View community? I will take my answers offline.
Thank you very much. Dave Cuddy, you have the floor.
Okay, I'll try to remember him. McCain is my choice. He was the only member of the Senate 12 years ago who at least gave me quiet support and met with me and gave me advice, and I appreciate that. I think if he wins that I'll have a good relationship with him. We both share some common philosophies of trying to get rid of wasteful spending and pork and some of those kinds of things and reforming our broken system of government. We're on opposite sides. I'm probably less of an advocate of cranking up military spending than he is, and of course, I support drilling in ANWR. So there are areas we differ, but I think that in basic philosophy of government, we're looking for the same kinds of changes. If Obama were to win, that's kind of hard to say. He says he's for reform and change, and so am I. But I guess the devil is in the detail, what reform and what change. And so we'll have to learn more. I guess a concern that I have with Obama is that too many times I've heard him say that we need to increase taxes on the productive to transfer that to the ever-growing number of people who are not productive. And my view is that we need to figure out how to be creating fewer non-productive and dysfunctional families and people, and so that because I don't think that if you taxed all of the productive people, I don't think there's enough money even at 100% to cover the $60 trillion of unfunded liabilities. We haven't even added yet the unfunded liabilities that we owe to our veterans from these wars. It's not about trying to figure out how to increase taxes. It's about how to figure out how to get people more productive and off the need for government. Let's see, what was the third? Oh, Mountain View. I don't believe that it is the function of a national, a federal legislator to be dealing with funding local projects. And in fact, I think that is the root of the problem. When politicians can bring federal money back and people think, oh, it's just free money, it's just federal money for a local project, that's where you get corruption. So I would oppose not that I wouldn't get our share, but my goal would be to change the system so nobody is bringing federal money back. If you want a local project, you tax yourself locally for it, and that gives us the true market test.
I want to probe a little bit on the if Obama wins side of it. You would be a minority U.S. senator. Ted Stevens is working with this. His seniority is still working for him. He's good friends with the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. How would you get along with Lisa Murkowski? And, you know, we've got two senators and only one person in the U.S. House. How would you be effective if you're really in the minority?
Well, I think Lisa was – when I was in the state legislature, she was one of our aides, and my recollection is she functioned, did a good job, and I'm sure that we'd get along fine. I don't know that there's any problems. Played tennis with her husband, Vern, in a tennis tournament here in Anchorage some years ago. I don't know that there'd be any problem, and I think that Lisa and I could work together just fine. And the same on the other side, whether it's Don Young or Sean Parnell or Berkowitz or Ledoux, any of those people, I don't have any reason to think that we couldn't get together and work out what the problems are. I think they're all I think if we can adopt the philosophy that this country has got major problems and we've got to make structural change in our election system and in our appropriation system and in our budgetary system, if we can all agree that that is a goal that we have, then I think we can work together with anybody.
I think whoever is elected, as far as I know, there's nobody running for the House or the Senate that opposes drilling in Anwar. Maybe there is, but
I'm not aware of anyone.
So we can assume probably that our entire delegation will continue to support that. But as to how to get there, well, that's kind of the problem, isn't it?
Actually, it isn't a problem. I don't blame Senator Stevens or Young or Murkowski for not getting drilling in Anwar. They're going – it's an uphill battle with the Congress and the folks in America. And I believe that whoever is there shouldn't take credit for it. I think we'll get drilling in Anwar. But I think the reason that we'll get it is if the price of gasoline goes up to $5 and $6 and $7 a gallon, there's going to come a point where the rest of America is going to say, enough, drill it. And they're going to go to their congressman and they're going to say, do it. And once that happens, it'll happen. And I don't think there's really anything, whether it's Senator Stevens or myself or Mark Begich or whomever is there, I think that it's just going to be a popular will support. And I don't think when it happens, anybody should really step up and take credit and beat their chest and say, I brought it. No one person in Alaska is going to bring it. It's going to come from the public will in the rest of America.
It sounds like you'll be quite comfortable with what appears to be the Republican Party line that we're hearing out of Washington every day, which is from the Republican side, look, we need to increase domestic – people are pained from high fuel prices and we need to look to our domestic sources. Sure, we need to transition over to renewable energies, but in the short term, we really need to find out what our resources are and develop them, whether it's coal or oil or so forth. It sounds like you'd be quite comfortable with that.
Well, I am comfortable with that as one option, but I don't think we ought to put all our eggs in that basket. Certainly alternate energy, I've followed it quite a bit. In fact, I've been managing a movie studio, and we were doing a piece on alternate energy where we interviewed biofuel people and solar and wind. And there's just so much energy out there just in the power of tidal currents. I mean, the current that runs off the coast of Texas. I mean, stick some turbines out there. And And I think we're going to get to that point. So I think alternate energy is a great way to go. I think nuclear is a great way to go. But one of the things we need to remember is half the reason that we're seeing $5 a gallon gasoline is part of it is the price of gas went up because demand, India and China is asking for more of it. But the other half of it is the dollar has gone down. And why has it gone down? We've got inept people in Congress who deficit spend. We've got to balance a trade deficit. We've got a budget deficit. And when you run the printing presses, anybody who's taken an economics 101 class knows as you print more dollars, they're going to have less value. And so we need to deal with the economic side. I mean, we're at the brink of a recession. We've got huge economic problems that we need to deal with, and they affect the price of energy or any other kinds of goods and commodities. It's not just gasoline and oil that's gone up. And so that's a part of the equation that the Republicans haven't been talking about because they've been in control, but they've caused a lot of that problem in this last 8 years.
Yeah, looking at the numbers of supply and demand for fuel, you do see China and India increasing, and you see the flexibility going out of the market, and then you can argue, as Senator Stevens has been, that speculation is contributing to the high price hedge funds and so forth are putting money into this that don't even belong in it. And I'll ask you about the merits of that, but I also want to say the dollar is a big part of
it's a huge part.
There's just no argument about it. You can see it every day. The dollar goes down, price of oil goes up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you don't hear – I mean, you're saying I'm comfortable with the Republican line. Well, the Republican line hasn't talked about that part of the reason. I mean, the 30% of the reason that the price of gasoline has gone up is because the dollar's gone down. Talk about it. They don't, because they caused it.
Well, how about this other issue of speculation, though? I want to see what you thought of that.
I think that's just crazy to start talking about limiting speculation. And for one thing, the U.S. can't eliminate worldwide speculation. And is it a factor? Maybe it is. But what are you going to do? You're going to get involved in the private market and say you're not allowed to bid up the futures market for this kind of thing? That's just crazy.
Yeah. There's some talk about getting some U.S. oversight and better disclosure of overseas trading, I guess. You don't think it may not be effective? It's
kind of like, I don't know what you – I don't know how I don't know how the U.S. regulates international worldwide trading in the futures market on oil. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah. Well, good point. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-TALK. They're certainly going to try, it would appear. 550-8422, a local call in Anchorage. Our guest is Dave Cuddy, running for the U.S. Senate. And let's go back to the calls from Anchor Point. This is Pat. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dave Cuddy, Pat.
Yeah, good morning, David. Say, health care seems to be on everybody's mind, along with the economy. I know you've been a leader in business and trained in economics. If it was put in front of the Senate, would you vote for universal health care? And if so, how would you fund it?
I love the second part of your question. How would you fund it? And we saw last week that our delegation, Stephen Jung and Murkowski, voted to increase spending in Medicare. And I'm not saying it wasn't appropriate, but I'm saying it was appropriate to not also figure out how you're going to fund that increase. It's easy to just simply be popular and say, oh, yes, we'll increase funding for whatever. But the hard part is to talk about how are you going to fund it. And so back to your question, universal health care. I hope that I'm not put in that position where that's the only choice, because I think we need to talk about the two parts of that, the cost part of the equation and how are we going to fund it. I don't know if I mentioned earlier the unfunded liability for our Medicare and Social Security funds. If you were to take all of that unfunded liability and spread it across every young person under 21, the amount that they would have to pay is $350,000. Well, how many young people are going to be able to earn that amount of money in addition to buying a house, getting married, raising kids, having a car, groceries, paying off school student debt? And so it's just not realistic. And so when you're looking at healthcare, I think one of the things we need to do is figure out, is there a way to cut the expenditures, because to simply say, well, we're going to make it universal health care, I think opens the floodgates to trillions more dollars of deficit spending, which is, again, going to be heaped on the backs of our children. The bigger thing we need to do is figure out, can we get the costs of health care down? I'm reminded of the administrator in a Tampa, Florida hospital. She was testifying, and she said, hey, one of the problems we have is we've got – in our hospital, we've got three illegal aliens who are have huge problems. They're running up $700,000 a year in medical bills, and, of course, they have no insurance, and Congress won't do anything. We can't deport them, even though we've said we'd pay the Medivac fee back to Guatemala. And so we have to increase the cost to all of our other patients. Well, we need to figure out how to deal with that kind of question. We need to to deal with $10 aspirins. And so I guess I'm not trying to avoid your question, but I'm saying that I hate to have the wrong question put in front of me. And the right question is, how do we get our costs down, regardless of who pays for it, whether it's universal or making corporations pay for it or whatever it is? I don't believe that at this point the country is rich enough to pay for the health insurance the way it is. I think we have to have some major work on trying to figure out how to get our costs down.
Pat, did you get your answer?
Yeah, I did. Thanks for your honesty, and it's a nice, fresh approach to politics in Alaska. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. It's Dave Cuddy running for U.S. Senate as our guest. We have a call over the internet, and a question over the internet. It's talk@APRN.org. And this one comes from Colleen, who says, well, you talk about getting non-producing individuals off the government dole, so to speak. What do you have to say about getting the pork-eating corporations off the government dole? Managers of many of these corporations are receiving obscene compensation packages that far exceed their value to the corporation.
Absolutely. I love that. And that's one reason that the Republicans don't embrace me fully is I believe that we have corporate welfare, and I believe that we have an unholy alliance between big corporations and politicians that do that kind of thing. I'm a firm believer in the capitalist system, free enterprise, but I think that the relationship with those big corporations has not been in the best interest of the country. Let me try to answer
it's
that.
Like isn't it the free market? I mean, there's a CEO job market, as it were, you know, where people have the talent to be good firm CEOs with a good grasp and get results. And aren't they entitled to a decent compensation? I mean, doesn't supply and demand work in the world of CEOs as well?
No. And the reason it doesn't is because there's this incestuous relationship between the big CEOs and their board of directors. And the CEO appoints and opens the door for those board of directors and offers them big compensation packages. And then in turn, they will turn around and vote $100 million pay for the CEO. And I can't think of any CEO that's worth that kind of money. So I think there's a conflict of interest between the people who set the CEO pay, the board of directors, and the CEOs, and they're paid way too much.
What about privatizing defense, which we seem to have seen a lot of and which we already know there's been a good deal of profiteering on?
I don't claim to be an expert in that area. My gut says that that's one of the things you don't privatize.
All right. Dave Cuddy is our guest. It's Talk of Alaska. Plain spoken, as you can tell. Conservative, you bet. 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Steve.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsized into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Our guest is Dave Cuddy. He's running for U.S. Senate, and we were in the midst of a conversation before we took the break about corporate welfare and excessive compensation, which you think is excessive to a number of corporate CEOs.
Well, the point I'd like to make is, I think it turns to the immigration question. A lot of us will ask, why is Congress allowing so much – a rapid increase of a population of our country and so much immigration? And it's my belief that the big corporations are looking to next quarter's profit, and they're saying, we want more market for our products and we want more cheap labor. And so we don't care – this is the corporation, big corporation speaking – where that labor comes from. We just – that's what we need to keep our costs down. And so – I think they fund the politicians, and so that's why we're not getting any action on the illegal immigration problem. And so that's, to me, yet one more case where, as we keep bringing in lots and lots of lesser educated people and lower income people, they don't earn enough money. We've lost our middle class, and they don't earn enough money to pay for their own health insurance. So they end up in the emergency wards of the hospital. They're not earning enough to pay for their share of sewers and schools and all of those things. So the taxpayer ends up subsidizing that low-cost labor that the corporations are looking for. So to me, that's yet one more case of the politicians that are in the pockets of the big corporations, and we've got to stop that stuff.
Well, I want to turn back to the healthcare issue just briefly. Actuarially, it appears that we're paying too much for our healthcare. You say we've got to do something about the cost, but the question is what? Because right now it wouldn't seem that the incentives are in the right place. When insurance companies, who are often the same entities that are also banks and selling credit cards and so forth, are free to deny service, when we see people's benefits decreasing, we're going to get more and more of this situation where people are forced into e-rooms when they don't really need it and so forth. How can we get the incentives around where they will start containing these costs? Because in the United States, we have our health is getting worse. Our healthcare cost continues to go up, and nobody seems to know how to fix it.
Well, I think one of the problems is that and there's no one answer, but one of the problems is that we have third-party payers, and we've just got to make sure that we keep the patient connected with a motivation and incentive to keep their costs down. And so the copay, I think, is very important to have involved with this. And then, as I was saying before the break, we have a lot of people who are consuming medical services who don't pay and are in the emergency end, and their costs are passed on to other people. We've got to figure out how to address that question, and not by just simply raising the cost for other people who are insured.
Dave Cuddy, our guest, and William from Fairbanks, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning. Mr. Cuddy, you had stated that you didn't see any way to reduce speculation in the futures market, but my understanding is that similar with the stocks, you have to put up a margin to cover the futures that you buy. At this point, I think it's 10%, like buying stocks before the great crash. You could put down 10% and control 100% of the stock. It's similar in the futures market. It's been suggested that be increased, so you'd have to put up, say, $30 to control $100 worth of oil futures. I wonder if you could remark on that. But and my question to the screener there was with regard to Randy Rudrick, who is the head of the Republican Party, who, to my mind, has been ethically challenged. How do you stand with regard to Randy Rudrick being the head of the Republican Party? There's an old saying, if you sleep with the dogs, you shouldn't be surprised if you come up with fleas. Could you comment on those two points? I'll hang up and listen to your response.
William, thank you.
I agree with you that you can change the you can change the rules for U.S. speculation in the oil market, but I don't see how the U.S. Congress or the U.S. Securities and Exchange can affect other markets. If somebody out there sees that there's money that can be made by running an exchange that speculates in oil futures, I don't see how Congress is going to be able to affect that. If there's going to be offshore in Bahamas or Switzerland or Africa or some other place, we just don't have the reach to affect that. And so that was my statement. I didn't say that we couldn't affect the speculation in oil futures within the U.S. stock exchange and the U.S. market. On Randy Rudrick, I've had a decent relationship with him. I would suspect that he's probably more supportive of my opponent in the primary, and I think in a lot of cases, if we it could be that it's time to just change the head of the party to rebuild the credibility of the Republican Party.
Well, it certainly worked for Sarah Palin, so. Thank you. Dave Cuddy is our guest. I appreciate a straightforward answer. Let's go to Jimbo in Kluckwan. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jimbo.
Good morning, fellas.
Morning.
Like I said, I'm from Kluckwan. Jim was my first name, and believe it or not, Stevens is my last name. No relation, so just make that straightforward right now. My question is on Veterans Affairs. Type thing. I'm getting back to one of the bills Ted Stevens introduced a while back. I'm a Vietnam vet, and he introduced a bill. Yeah, he was going to try to get us like $50 for every month we spend in the combat zone and all that stuff. I'll put in a plug for the Haines-Cluckwan area here in Southeast. Over 20 of us from this area went to Vietnam, and all 20 of us came home, more than 20, 23, I believe. So, I heard you say you're in back McCain. He's a veteran. I know veterans seem to, it only comes to surface like when they're, how they're treated when they get home and all that. Could we expect anything along that line, like say combat zone veterans receiving extra pay, like extra combat pay? I'll hang up now and listen to your answer.
Thanks, Jimbo, and congratulations to you and your buddies who survived. Thank you.
I don't know about $50 a month or what the proper thing is. I haven't researched to know what that should be. But I do say that even though I'm a limited government and a reduce the budget kind of guy, veterans and our highways and bridges are two areas that I believe that we need to fully fund and make sure that we have safe bridges and roads and that we take care of our veterans. One of the concerns that I have is that the present system doesn't fund the veterans' expenses that are expected in the future. It's an unfunded liability. And so as we're looking at the costs of the Iraq war right now, we're not including what we're going to have to pay veterans and should pay veterans over the next 30 or 40 years. So I think that number should be included in the budget, and perhaps we ought to actually fund it now and set that money aside so that we don't have veterans who are coming in unfairly asking for their benefits, which they shouldn't have to be beggars.
Stevens, Young, and Murkowski have all been pushing for better mental health benefits and some kind of facility in rural Alaska so that veterans who have mental health problems, returning veterans, don't have to go into Anchorage or Fairbanks.
But they have not pushed for funding the unfunded future liability. That ought to be, I mean, that's an expense that we're incurring today and ought to go on the books today.
Well, no time for a closing statement.
Okay.
Dave Cuddy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Steve.
Dave Cuddy running for U.S. Senate against Ted Stevens, who was indicted today. Of course, there'll be plenty more on the issue of the Ted Stevens indictment on on Alaska News Nightly later on today from the Alaska Public Radio Network. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Public radio listeners make their voices heard in their communities. Underwriting on APRN programming reaches this audience. 273-9176 for information.
Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.